This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com coming to you on the 3rd of June 2011, and today I am talking to a professor of signals processing in Argentina named Mark Ressel. And I should preface this conversation by saying that Mark Ressel got in touch with me through the contact form on CorbettReport.com talking about my recent video on Bitcoin and raising some interesting problems with the idea of encryption and cryptography in an age where quantum computing is becoming a reality. So, Mark Ressel, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Okay, my pleasure.
All right, well, let's start getting into this issue, and it is there's a lot to it, but I think we can break it down for listeners in a way that even non-specialists will be able to understand it. So I guess we should start by trying to explain to people how public key encryption works and the ways that that information is coded on the internet.
Well, basically, the one issue to be capable of sending information in a secure way to some other party you don't even know. And the problem is you are not capable of sending the key because everybody's listening and everybody would see the key. So that's a solution that was, that's a problem that was solved by using a concept called public key cryptography. And I guess most of the listeners have heard of it. And the idea is that you have two prime numbers, and those prime numbers are, when they are multiplied, they are called a public key. And when they are received, the receiver of this message that was encrypted using a public key uses his private key, which consists of those two prime numbers, which are not which have been factorized. This means, like, as most of you must remember from your school, factorization means finding those prime numbers that make up a composed number. I don't know if there's something else you would like to add at this stage, so I make myself clear, right?
I think that makes sense. So basically, what you're saying is that the public key is the end product of the multiplication of two prime numbers, and the private key is those two prime numbers itself.
That's correct. Yeah. So why is let me just give you a simple example. For example, you take two prime numbers like 17 and 19, and you multiply them together, and you have a prime number. A composed number which is 323. And so my private key would be 17 and 19. My public key would be 323. When you want to send me something, you use my public key, which I can tell you it's 323. And I am capable of decoding the message because I know it's 17 and 19. Now, obviously, it's not very hard to factorize the number 323. You just look for all those prime numbers below 323 and you find it's very, very easy to find those prime numbers. Now, suppose the prime numbers have like 100 digits or so, then it becomes suddenly hard because all the prime numbers you have to find, the number of prime numbers is very large. So it's a very hard problem for a conventional computer. Okay? Like if there's, how do you say this? If there's anything to add to this, I don't know if...
Right, so put that into perspective for people. So when we're talking about these 100-digit prime numbers multiplied together and to form the public key, I mean, with someone's computer, if they were just trying to brute force process that, how long would an average computer take to process?
Well, it would take a lot of years, definitely, like 10 to the something years, like something that would be way far what an average life is. So
for all intents and purposes, it's impossible.
Yeah, that's impossible. That's correct. That's actually the idea behind it, because the idea is factorization is hard. It's a hard problem. So it would take, with a regular computer, a lot of time to find those prime numbers that make up the composed prime number, correct?
Right, so that sounds like a very safe way of operating, and that's why we use this this very secure technology. And what could possibly happen to upset that balance?
Well, that's a problem. There's a problem, and it's related to quantum computing. And the idea about quantum computing is it makes a certain kind of problems that are in a regular computer very hard, very, very fast. Actually, instantaneous, actually. So it happens that the problem of prime factorization is a problem which can be solved in a very short time, or at least I should say could be solved in a very short time with a quantum computer. And at this stage, I'd like to talk a little bit about what a quantum computer is. And it has to deal with probabilities. So when you have a regular computer, you have bits, and everybody knows what a bit is. It's a zero or a one. It's a well-defined zero or a one. You don't have any other possibilities. Now, when you go to a quantum computer, there is no bit. There is a different entity, which is called qubit. Qubit, the word comes from quantum. And a qubit has a 50% chance of being a zero or a one. Okay? Now, if you have a single a qubit, it doesn't, how do you say this? It's not very useful, you could say. But if you, for example, have a certain number of qubits and you bond them together, for example, if a certain qubit is zero and if a certain other qubit is one, then this other qubit must also be one. So you're capable of defining a network of relationships among those qubits. Now, I'm not saying this is easy, this is very hard, but if you're capable, for example, of defining the rules for factorization in this, in let's say like 128 qubits, then you would be capable of finding the solution to the factorization problem in a single processing step. This is a very hard result. Now, according to the mainstream research, how could you say this? Like mainstream research. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't find the word.
The mainstream research,
community. What? Yeah.
I see. Right.
That was the word. There has been some progress, and I think they were able to have a very low qubit computer. They produced a very low bit qubit computer a couple of years ago. I think that was 2006. I'm honestly not sure, but there has been recently an announcement by a company called D-Wave. They have the first commercial quantum computer called D-Wave 1. And I've taken a look at their material, and it seems serious. And, it's a 128-qubit computer. And one of its purposes, well, it's factorization. They have other uses as well. They have other uses, for example, for artificial intelligence problems where you have to find a certain optimal solution to some kind of problem. But the main issue is factorization. This means you would be capable of getting the prime numbers that make up this public key number, which you send in public key cryptography. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Right. So okay. This to me is particularly interesting because, as we know, as you stress, this is the first commercially available quantum computer, but one would have to assume that what is being done in behind closed doors in research that's being funded by presumably military and other such institutions, one would imagine that there would be much more advanced versions of this type of technology available somewhere. And of course, it would be probably military and intelligence agencies that would have access to this type of technology long before anyone else, which would, I guess, imply that they would have the ability to break this public key encryption very easily before anyone else would be able to do so.
Well, one has always to be very careful when he does, supposition. But in this case, it would make sense. And that's why I contacted you, because I thought in regard to this Bitcoin project that of course I'm hoping to hear some counter arguments in regard to what I'm saying, but one of those counter arguments would be the following: if you have a currency, and I must honestly say I haven't done a lot of research into the actual protocols that are used by Bitcoin, But if you have a currency which is based on public key cryptography or is using hashes, which is another issue which I haven't addressed here, but it would also be possible to find a solution to another tool which is commonly used to authenticate hashes. If you could crack those numbers very easily, well, that would be, I could say, very dangerous, because you could falsify information, you could publish information in the name of others, and eventually you could, for example, flood the market with fake bitcoins, if I'm not mistaken. That's why I'm willing to hear counter arguments to what I'm saying. Okay,
right. But the concept at least makes sense, depending, as you say, on the specific protocols that are being used. But so the idea is that if somebody could crack these uncrackable public keys very quickly, very easily, in the way that someone presumably could with quantum computing technology, that means that they could counterfeit the key, and they could basically send information and make it look like it was coming from you.
Well, basically, that's correct. That's the problem. Now, what would be the solution? Because I always think it's a good idea to talk about possible solutions, but that's the problem. That's not very easy. The only thing that would work would be quantum cryptography, which is a problem because you would need special fiber optic links in order to do that. But I believe that that's what's going to happen in the long term, like in a couple, like, I don't know, I would say like in 5 years, 10 years, I don't know, but that's my personal belief. I think that's what's going to happen.
At the risk of losing all of the people in the audience, including myself, who are laymen at this and really don't understand the ins and outs, what would quantum computing be based on? I mean, what I can understand multiplying prime numbers together and coming up with a large number. I can understand that, but quantum cryptography, what are we talking about?
Okay, what we're basically talking about is, suppose you have an optic fiber and you send, pulses of light, which you're usually using in a fiber optic network. You send a pulse of light, you receive it at the other side, and that's the information you're sending. That's regular bits. But you're sending individual photons, okay? Just imagine, like, the tiniest amount of light you could send, and you just send one single photon, and the chance, the probability of sending a photon, this is not determined. You cannot say, now there's coming a photon, now there's not coming a photon. There's a certain probability. Now, this is perfect, because actually the information is random, and that's what is looked after in a cryptography scheme, randomness, okay? Because you want to, when you encrypt, you need randomness in order to encode your message. Now, those random bits of information, the photons, whenever somebody tampers with the optic fiber cable, the state of the photon is changed. Because I don't know if I'm making myself clear, but this change of state enables the information to be altered. So once somebody eavesdrop on a quantum cryptography link, it's impossible it's like the link is broken and the tampering is like self-evident, okay?
That's right, that's I see. Because one of the precepts of quantum strangeness is that when you observe something, you actually change that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so if you were to observe one of these photons that were traveling through, then that would mean it would actually change the information, and presumably the message would then be obviously scrambled or whatever.
Yeah, and right, it would be like immune to attacks, because once you're attacked, it just like falls, and so there's no possibility of eavesdropping.
Unless they could eavesdrop on the entire conversation, in which case they would get all of the information.
Well, that's not possible, because if you eavesdrop, you're changing the state. You in quantum physics, when you're observing, you must have heard of the this problem with the observer changing the experiment.
Right, right. The slits in the electrons and that sort of thing.
That's correct.
Right. So, but I mean, not eavesdrop per se, but I mean actually to intercept the message and to take it completely, not let it go through.
It would not be possible because once you change, you just like, for example, cut the optic fiber cable or whatever, and it stops working because you're changing the state of the photons. So that would be virtually impossible to break, according to what we know at this stage in humankind, right?
Okay, so it's a whole different type of cryptography, but it would still be theoretically possible.
It's not. It's actually practically possible because I think I heard this year they announced. I think it was this year or last year in Switzerland they made an experiment. I think it was 10 or 20 kilometers and it worked. So this is practical actually at this stage. It's very new. It's brand new, but it's practical and the experiments are being done on this. Right.
Fascinating stuff. Extremely fascinating. Getting back to the point, I mean, this means that quantum computing will change cryptography as we know it, and all of the cryptography that we're using on the internet will be completely useless in a quantum computing paradigm.
If what I'm saying is true, because one has always to be careful, if what I'm saying is true, well, that's the case, and I believe that there are issues here, and I believe that those issues have to be tackled. And well, how do you say this? This is very sensitive information, right?
Right. Well, it is, isn't it? And you're right. We have to be careful to understand the limits of our knowledge and when we are simply speculating. But again, the possibility that the quantum computing could be in private hands would be an incredible advantage to be used and wielded, meaning that it could break any cryptography that currently exists. That is an extremely powerful tool that could be used in a lot of different ways. So it's certainly something to think about and to really keep in mind. And it brings up the point that John Young of Cryptome.org made on this program last year when he said that the idea that you could ever have completely secure exchange of information over the internet is something of a pipe dream, and he doesn't think that that's actually theoretically possible. I think that's something that we have to take in mind and really understand that these systems are always subject to being tampered with and spied on in some degree. So a lot to take on board and very interesting ideas. So I take it you spend a lot of your time thinking about these types of problems.
Well, actually, this is actually not exactly my field of knowledge of the field in which I'm working, but there are issues here, and I think one has to understand. And this is as I told you, this is very sensitive, and of course, you don't also want to fall into the paranoia because, I mean, there's nothing one can do against it. But I do believe that in the long term, maybe 5-10 years, I do believe that quantum links are going to be used for very secure cryptography. So that's my belief, right?
Well, very interesting, and I would be interested to hear arguments and counter arguments from other people out there who have been involved in this research or studying. So if there are other people who want to get in on this debate, well, by all means, get in touch with me and we'll see what we can do. But very interesting topic. And there's so many different ways to branch out from this. But I think for now, let's just leave it there. And we'll leave the listeners to ponder and hopefully listen to this conversation several times if need be to figure out what we're talking about. But very interesting stuff. So Mark Russell, anything else you'd like to add for the listeners today?
Well, I'd just like to thank you for your opportunity, and one last thing. I hope I made myself clear, and I love to teach. This is the first time I'm trying to do this in a very hard topic, but I honestly hope that the message went through.
Well, I think I received it, so we'll see. But at any rate, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Okay. No, you're welcome, and thank you. for the opportunity, as I told you.